This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, what's up? Welcome. 2 hours as usual here on The Edge, and a fantastic 2 hours at that. Matt Youmans, of course, going to join us because it is Thursday. We'll discuss his thoughts on the upcoming college football schedule. We have a big one on Saturday, as pretty much every single conference is in action, or at least the ones that we all care about, right? Big Ten is going to be back in action. The Mountain West, I know you all care. But we'll get his thoughts on that and the National Football League as well, on top of plenty of coverage and just the rest of the college football slate. But we begin with a little bit about last night. As we had the season, or series, I should say, evened up between the Tampa Bay Rays and Los Angeles Dodgers. Tampa Bay 6, Los Angeles 4. Result is that Tampa Bay, who closed plus 11, 111, by the way. Game goes over the total of 8, which we'll get to in a little bit. But Snell, Rays bullpen stifled. The Dodgers get this series tied at one game apiece, and Snell was brilliant. You see the closing numbers here. Closed plus 113 at the South Point, plus 111 over at the Westgate and other shops. Snell, 4 2/3, 2 hits, 4 walks, 2 earned runs. The 2 earned runs courtesy of 1 2-run shot. Had 9 strikeouts, actually had a no-hitter going until that Chris Taylor 2-run home run in the 5th inning. And then the bullpen comes in and takes it the rest of the way. Anderson, Fairbanks, Loop, Castillo, a total of 4 1/3 innings, 3 hits, 0 walks, 2 earned runs, both of them solo homers, 6 strikeouts. And coming in and delivering in high leverage spots. Anderson comes in bottom of the 5th. He's got runners on 1st and 2nd, 2 outs. He gets Turner to whiff on a fastball to end the frame. In the 8th, Fairbanks gives up a solo shot to Seager, a double to Turner. So Bellinger comes up representing the tying run. You're thinking, okay, here we go, the Dodgers. This is what they do. This is what this lineup does. They're annoying. It's a pestering lineup that will get itself in situations where they can come back from deficits no matter what it is. Almost Warriors-esque in the way that they are always in games despite the deficit they face early on. But Loop comes in and gets Bellinger to strike out looking. And so this was a very good performance overall from the Tampa Bay Rays, offensively and defensively, and taking advantage of the Los Angeles Dodgers bullpen, which has surprisingly been subpar up to this point. But through the series, and this is what's interesting about this going forward too, is like it's the guys who are like big names in the bullpen for the Los Angeles Dodgers, right? Guys that you expect to deliver in these spots. So Dustin May, for example, I know the kid's young, but he had done a great job up to this point. The postseason, I don't think, has been exactly what you expected from him. And May comes in and doesn't have the best performance, goes 1 1/3, gives up 4 hits, 3 earned runs, only strikes out one. One of those, of course, courtesy of a home run. May in the postseason, up to this point, I think maybe in certain spots, you expected a little bit more out of him. A 5 ERA up to this point in the postseason, and really it started at the back end of that Braves series where he pitched 2 innings in the it was back on the 16th in that 7-3 win over the Braves. Gives up an earned run and 2 runs total, 3 hits, strikes out 3 there, and he kind of snowballs after that. The walks have been an issue for May. Didn't walk anybody last time out, but had 2 walks in each of his last 2 appearances, right? And so I think that's kind of been the surprising part about this series for the Dodgers. I mean, think about this overall. The Dodgers in this series, and I get it, they won game one. But remember the Rays, you know, tacked on a couple of runs late in that game that was essentially dominated in game one. 5.91 ERA, 1.50 whip, 2 strikeouts, and a home run for the Dodgers bullpen. We can talk about Gonsolin, who, if you remember our analysis yesterday, was Gonsolin has not been good for this team, and yet you can understand why. A price that opened up plus 135 on the Rays got down to plus 113 here at the South Point Casino. But Gonsolin hasn't been good, and I don't equate, you know, I didn't use him, of course, because he was the starter last night. But when you looked at some of those bullpen numbers again, 5.91 ERA, 1.50 whip, 2 strikeouts, 1 home run for the bullpen in this series alone. So it's just 2 games for the Dodgers compared to the Rays. And here's the interesting part about this is the Rays bullpen hasn't really been that great. It's just the guys that have come in key situations in high leverage spots have taken care of business. Rays bullpen through 2 games in this series, 4.50 ERA, 1.37 whip, 9 strikeouts, which is a big difference, and 3 home runs. So while they're giving up home runs at a much higher clip, obviously, getting guys to strike out more, limiting base runners, a lower whip, and of course the ERA at 4.50. So overall, this is kind of how we expected this to play out so far, right? Like we talked about this at the beginning of the series, that kind of like the Rays overall, and I can understand the analysis that the series price was a little too high in terms of Dodgers minus 210, 215, but that I thought the Dodgers in game one were in a much better spot with Kershaw in that spot. Taking on Glasnow. Ultimately, they lose that game the way the Rays do. come back, bet their series price after game one, and then sure enough, they get out of here, and you get good Snell, and so now you have a tied series right now at 1-1, and I get about plus 330, I think, is the series ticket right now on the adjusted price after game one for the Tampa Bay Rays. So going forward, now this is a really big spot and an interesting spot for the next matchup on Friday between these two teams, because you get Walker Buehler versus Charlie Morton, and both of these guys have been really solid up to this point. And even go back for Buehler, the last time we saw him against the Atlanta Braves, overall, the stat line was fantastic. 6 innings pitched, 7 hits in that game, struck out 6. If you remember, I think it was the first or the second inning in which he had loaded the bases, but then strikes out the side. Buehler, despite the fact that he'd been dealing with blister injuries, of course, has been working through that and has been really good in the postseason overall. And in fact, a postseason ERA of 189 has given up more than just one earned run in the start just one time, and that was a 4 innings, 2 earned run start against the Milwaukee Brewers where those blister injuries or blister issues started to pop up. And the walks, that's the other thing to watch with Buehler. And again, maybe it's the issue with command and the blisters had been affecting him, and maybe some extended rest here helps him out. But remember, in the back-to-back starts against San Diego and Atlanta, he had pitched a combined 9 innings and had given up 9 walks. So while the earned runs have not been there, the whip is a little bit higher for Buehler up to this point. The walks have been a slight issue. Overall, 11 walks and 19 innings of work, but you would expect that that's going to start to even out, and it did indeed the last time we saw him, where he goes 6 innings, 7 hits, no walks whatsoever, and strikes out 6. So I'd expect that to kind of calm down up to this point. And then, of course, the other side of this is Charlie Morton, who has been just as good as Buehler, if not a little bit better statistically. We're 15 and 2/3. He's got a 0.57 ERA, a 382 xFIP, so maybe some regression coming here for Morton. But again, if you remember, at least the barometer that I'll use in terms of xFIP and where I'm looking at for some of these pitchers, still under that 4-1, that 4-1 mark, which is pretty solid. A whip of 0.96, so less than a runner per inning, and a 977 on the strikeouts per nine. Buehler a little bit higher, 13.7 during the postseason. So regardless, this is a fascinating pitching matchup coming up on Friday, because remember, now the schedule is back to like a normal series overall. Opening price, Dodgers minus 155, Tampa Bay Rays plus 145. This is what's interesting too, and this is what I wanted to focus on with this game as well. So the total opens up 8 shaded to the under at minus 120. Now we're looking at 7.5 shaded to the over at minus 115. Each of the last two games have gone over the total. And I was thinking that maybe, you know what, after watching the first two games, like, you know, the market maybe thinking that this is a matchup of pitching and the fact that these are maybe going to be lower scoring games. We've seen 7.5s for these games as well. Yet both games have gone over the total. And then you factor in the bullpen numbers that I gave you, that maybe both bullpens aren't operating at the same level that we essentially expected for the most part. But having said all of that, you would assume that this is the game that would potentially go under and maybe like a first 5 under given the status of these bullpens once you get past these guys. But I think you can expect longer outings from both Morton and Buehler. You can expect, at least from what we've seen in the postseason, some really good performances from them. High strikeouts, not a lot of runs. And so maybe this is the game that goes under the total for both of these. And the market thinks so too, getting it off that 8, sitting at 7.5. So we'll have the full details on game 3, again, coming up on Friday. But I think this series has been everything we've expected. It's been a fun series. It's been a great one to watch. Both teams have been playing extremely well. Both teams, of course, getting their game. Now a 1-1 series going into game 3 on Friday. With that, we do have a Thursday night game tonight. The New York Giants taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. If you remember this number, whether it's look ahead, whatever, open Philadelphia open 6 with a total of 45. We get the news, of course, the injuries, the two big ones, Ertz and Sanders, aren't going to play multiple weeks potentially for both of them. Ertz up to 4 weeks, Sanders, of course, up to 2. This number got to as low as 3.5. Thought it was kind of an overreaction. And then sure enough, market corrects itself. Solid 4.5 across the board right now between these two clubs on Thursday night. This is going to be fascinating, man, because we kind of talked about this with Steve Serby yesterday. A sneaky good, I don't say sneaky good, sneaky solid New York Giants defense taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. New York ranks 16th in defensive efficiency. They're giving up 38.56 yards per drive, which needs to improve. But the big positive is that one of their best defensive players, David Bile, returned last week. They should be better up front going forward in that front 7, especially against the run. It also helps when you're taking on the 28th ranked defense, at least in terms of overall efficiency, in the Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz, we noted this yesterday, but it's worth rehashing because in the first 4 weeks, he had not been good. 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, well under 6 yards per attempt. But the last 2 weeks, the Philadelphia Eagles have gotten a little bit better, especially from an offensive standpoint. When you're talking about, for Carson Wentz, completion percentage down, but yards per attempt up over 5 to 6.28, 4 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, so a positive touchdown to interception ratio. The offensive line has been worse, but news is that Lane Johnson is going to play today, which is going to help them out immensely. He's taken 14 sacks over the last 2 weeks. Carson Wentz has just been getting destroyed after taking 11 in the first four. Giants don't exactly have the dominant pass rush that maybe can take advantage of that, especially with Lane Johnson back. So I'd expect that Carson Wentz is going to have a better day again. And the positive trend continuing here for Wentz, just because I think he'll be able to stay upright. But again, we're talking about through the first few weeks of the season, not performing well from an offensive standpoint, but the last 2 weeks, not only did he get the positive touchdown to interception ratio, more yards per attempt from Carson Wentz, but the Eagles have averaged 28.5 points per game, 350 yards per game, much better than what they were doing in the first 4 weeks of the season. So you're seeing this incremental improvement. It's just now, right? DeSean Jackson's going to be back, but the skill positions have been beat up. We know Rager's still out. We know that Sanders isn't going to play. Ertz isn't going to play. So how this operates for Wentz, despite the fact that your offensive line's getting healthy, but your skill position players are still getting ravaged with injuries up to this point. But then it's the flip side, right? It's the fact that New York's offense has been pretty terrible as well, and how this matches up with Philadelphia. And I did play something on here, and I'll get to that in a second. But New York's offense, right, 32nd overall in offensive efficiency for the New York Giants, according to Football Outsiders. Just barely worse than their fellow New York team, but worse nonetheless. So, like, that's pretty impressive, right? To have an offense worse than the New York Jets at this point of the season, but the New York Giants do have that. And look, they have been beat up a lot, right? We're talking about the loss of Saquon Barkley. We're talking about Sterling Shepard, who has been out of the lineup. We are talking about Golden Tate at one point being out of the lineup too. Like, the skill positions have been in and out and haven't been healthy for Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. That maybe is starting to turn around here because Sterling Shepard's going to be back. Now you're going to have Darius Slayton, who was on the injury report with a foot issue, but had been participating limited in practice, never in danger of missing this game. Of course, Golden Tate's still healthy now and Shepard coming back. So you essentially get your top three receivers here if you're Daniel Jones, which should be a massive positive for him today. And it should help because this is an offense that we're talking about 31.02 yards per drive, 1.6 points per drive, even worse. And this has been the crux of the issue for Danny Dimes of the Giants, 0.185 turnovers per drive, 30th in the National Football League. How about this? The New York Giants in the National Football League have turned the ball over 10 times. Daniel Jones is responsible for 9 of those. He's thrown 6 interceptions and 3 fumbles. Like, there's no indication that that's going to improve anytime soon. But you're taking on the Philadelphia Eagles, who have injuries at all three levels of their defense and who have not forced a lot of turnovers this year either. So this is kind of the, like, I don't know if this is the proper thing, but I'm going to do it. Is this like the chicken egg thing? Like, is it Danny Dimes and the fact that he's got a penchant for turnovers, or is it the fact that the defense he's facing are forcing turnovers? I would think it is the latter, and that Daniel Jones has an issue with turnovers, and that Philadelphia, who has not been good this season at forcing turnovers, might be able to get one, potentially two, just because of what we've seen from Daniel Jones up to this point. So all of this being said, right, I have two offenses that haven't been performing very well. Even the offense of the Philadelphia Eagles that I've made the case as performing a little bit better, we're still talking about some pretty bad numbers in terms of 6.2 yards per attempt from your quarterback up to this point. Skill positions are beat up, even though the offense aligns a little bit better. And on the other side, the 32nd ranked overall defense and a 32nd ranked overall offense and a quarterback that's got a turnover issue. This total opened up at 45. Right now, across the board, it's still sitting at 45. Westgate's got 44.5, and other shops are really across the board 45. I bet this under 45 this morning, and that was the opening number. So you're still getting under that opening number if you want to bet it, and maybe the market's starting to get to that point too, as one shop at least moving down to the 44.5 mark. And we should note too that actually at the Westgate, the initial market move on this game was to the under. It opened up 45, got to as low as 43.5 before making its way back up to the 44.5 currently over at the Superbook and other shops. So to me, I'd rather bet this under. It's a Thursday night game. It's a short week. I have two terrible offenses. I have a quarterback that is prone to making or committing turnovers as well for the New York Giants. And I get the opening number still of 45, so not missing any value there. So bet this one under the total for Thursday night. As far as the side goes, when it was at 3.5, I do like the I like the Philadelphia Eagles here, right? I don't want to lay 4.5. I actually thought when they were sitting at 6, I didn't think at the beginning of the week that number was going to move. I had put them on the list of candidates to throw on a teaser as well on Thursday, but I do think the Philadelphia Eagles win. As far as laying 4.5, the fact that you could have gotten 3.5 and the fact that it was out there for a minute, it turns me off a little bit from laying that, but I do think the Eagles are going to win this game here against the New York Giants. The Giants are a decent defensive team. I think they're even a little bit better than the 18th overall mark, right, that they're getting credit for, especially with Mile back, but just not sure that I have I don't want to lay a bad number, essentially, and 4.5 is that number that we're discussing. Really quickly, as far as the injury report's concerned, just to rattle these off really quick, Philadelphia Eagles, Jack Driscoll, offensive tackle, Kevon Wallace, safety, Malik Jackson, defensive tackle, Alshon Jeffrey, who has, by the way, been limited in practice for the last 2 weeks but still cannot make it back. I'd expect maybe for him to be in action the next time out. Miles Sanders, Zach Ertz, all out for the Philadelphia Eagles. Adrian Colbert, C.J. Board, who took that scary hit and dealing with a concussion, not going to play for the New York Giants. So relatively clean report for the Giants, especially with the receivers coming back. Philadelphia Eagles, the usual laundry list of bodies that will not play, which is absolutely incredible. And I have no idea at what point is that going to correct itself and at what point you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and the way they're handling things as an organization. With that, plenty to get to in this hour. We're going to get to the Big 12, take a look at Oklahoma-TCU. Pretty fascinating matchup there between these two programs. TCU's defense, 26th in the country, taking on the 10th best offense in the country in Oklahoma. We also have plenty to get to in the world of the National Football League as we have more adjusted win totals to discuss on the other side, because we talked about 3 last week and we can check in on those and see where we're at, because I feel like we were on the right track with some of them. We also have notable Week 7 line moves in the second hour. Don't go anywhere. It's The Edge here on VSiN. Swiss skydiver race in the distaff, or will she test the boys again in the classic? Owner Peter Callahan discusses her Breeders' Cup plans in the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. Also, 2 triple crowns that could be won this weekend on opposite sides of the world. Ashley Mayu talks about Mighty Heart's bid to win it in Canada with just one eye. And Kate Hunter previews Contrail's run for a sweep in Japan. The Ron Flatter Racing Pod posts Friday at vsin.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, sponsored by First Bet. All right. So, last week we talked a little bit about adjusted win totals. One of the ones that we were talking about, we talked about a few. The Los Angeles Rams, of course, were one. Talking about potentially playing that under, considering everything that was going on with that team and the fact that they had 4 wins over the NFC East and did not look great. So, we have 4 more to discuss. And by the way, they lost the game to the 49ers, so looks pretty good in that regard going under the 11 wins. So, let's take a look at a couple of things here. Adjusted win totals for a few teams, right? Broncos, Titans, Steelers, and Patriots. The 4 teams here, these via BetRivers. Broncos, win total sitting at 6, shaded to the over at -134. Titans and Steelers, both at 11.5, shaded to the under for the Titans at -159. Over on the Steelers at -115. Patriots, 8.5, shaded to the under at -121. Now, the first, obviously, fascinating matchup here is the Titans and the Steelers, considering they play one another this coming weekend, and that the way you handicap that game should partially affect how you're looking at this win total, right? Titans right now, 1-point favorite across the board, 1.5 over at DraftKings as well, total 50.5. So this goes into the thought process that I have had, right, with these teams. I have not been a big fan, actually, of either team, at least in the big picture. I think the Steelers have left a lot to be desired in certain spots. The Titans, as you have noted, if you've watched either Mondays or Sundays where Wes and I discuss it, that the Titans are not as good as I think that we see, right? Even though that they're sitting here right now 5-0 and on top of the AFC South and competing for the top seed in the AFC, considering that the Chiefs have a single loss to their name right now. I think the Steelers here are the bet this coming weekend. So if I'm looking at this, like, I can understand, like, I want to go under 11.5 is what I'm saying here with the Tennessee Titans. However, what I find surprising is the price of -160, essentially, considering that they're favored and I get it, it's only 1 point, but that they are favored in the matchup over the Steelers, right? Because a loss today would obviously go a good way towards helping you out going underneath the total of 11.5. So overall, I'm not really comfortable in the Steelers either. Again, you're talking about winning 12 games for both of these teams. The Steelers still have to play, right? The Ravens in that division. They have another matchup with the Browns, and as dominant as that win was for the Browns, still the Browns who maybe have a relatively high ceiling offensively if they can turn things back around and get them back at home. So for both of these teams, I kind of think 11 wins is going to be the ceiling. But it just sticks out to me that the Titans favored to win this weekend, shaded to the under at minus 159. As far as the others go, and again, these are two teams that just face one another, the Broncos sitting at 6 wins, shaded to the over at minus 134. Patriots at 8.5 wins, shaded to the under at minus 121. The Patriots are an interesting case study here, too, because, right, 2-3, but a division around them that looks pretty vulnerable, right? The Buffalo Bills, I think, as we discussed the other day, are a team that actually is the exact same team we've seen through the first few weeks of the season. It's just that they've lost two straight games to the Titans and to the Chiefs. The Patriots have lost two games as well. But you're talking about the New York Jets, who we know how bad they are. We're talking about the Miami Dolphins, you have one more game against, who are now starting a rookie quarterback, and who knows what's going to happen with Tua. In that regard, I do think Tua is going to be very good. And again, to reiterate, the Dolphins do have among the AFC East teams, they lead the AFC East in terms of overall efficiency. If you look at the DVOA numbers, they're sixth or seventh in terms of efficiency in the AFC, right? But that's all with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, and how that changes going forward with Tua Tagovailoa is a question mark. I thought the Patriots were going to be a 9-win team here. And the fact that you're looking at 8.5 shaded to the under at minus 121, nothing has happened to the first 5 games that would ultimately move me off my opinion that the Patriots are going to win 9 games. So didn't feel anything strongly here. And really, through the first 5 games, depending on where you looked, right, in terms of win totals and whatnot, like, the market's kind of in line with where we were at the beginning of the season. So nothing's really changed to the point where I'd want to dive in. And as far as the Broncos are concerned, shaded to the over minus 134, this Broncos team has quite the schedule left, right? We're talking about taking on the Chiefs as a 9.5-point underdog today, at the Falcons, at the Raiders, home against the Chargers and the Dolphins and the Saints. Then you have to go back-to-back road games, Chiefs, Panthers, Bills, Chargers, Raiders to round out the schedule. It's a really tough schedule for a Broncos team that I think has a really limited ceiling offensively. But I don't think they're down to the point where I'm going to go under 6 and hope that they win 5 games, right, and only win a couple more the rest of the way. Nothing strong there, but I do think under 11.5 for both the Titans and the Steelers, something worth looking at in terms of these adjusted win totals in the AFC. All right, when we come back, take a look at the Big 12 in terms of the slate this weekend. Oklahoma, TCU, pretty fascinating matchup here as the Sooners try to maintain pace in that conference. Iowa State, Oklahoma State as well. Schedule. We've updated the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, including all the teams from the Big Ten, Mid-Atlantic, and Pac-12. Oh, and the Mountain West. I wrote that one. Get the guide plus everything VSiN has to offer for the rest of the football season for only $129 from now through the February 8th. You'll get our weekly digital betting guides, pro and college football previews, 24/7 live video stream, daily email updates featuring the best bets from every show, host, and guest, breaking news, advanced stats, and game previews on VSiN.com. Get in the game, visit VSiN.com/subscribe. Get your football midseason special today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Okay, college football, big week in the Big 12 as they kind of had an off week, one game last week between Kansas and West Virginia. So let's take a look at some of the games. And this is a really fascinating conference. You remember a couple of weeks ago, actually, we talked about, like, the pecking order, and we played the clip of our clip of the week from Tim Murray and Mal Shaw just about, right, the stacking, or the order in terms of odds and Oklahoma being the favorite and who is going to be able to compete for this. And so this is a big weekend towards kind of settling that all out, and every weekend in that conference is going to be. So let's start with Oklahoma. Oklahoma opens a 5-point favorite over TCU with a total of 60.5. This total is down to 59, currently sitting at Oklahoma -6.5 against the Horned Frogs. So my initial question here is Horned Frogs defensively, the ability to contain, right, Oklahoma. I'll put that in air quotes a little bit because We know that Oklahoma, at times, and a couple of these interceptions have been courtesy of end-of-game drives trying to make something happen, but Spencer Rattler has shown at times that he is has a penchant to turn the ball over. He's got five interceptions through four games, three consecutive games with an interception, including that three-pick game against Kansas State. But regardless, TCU, 26th in total defense, 366.7 yards per game. That gives them the 26th rank. However, a little bit lower in terms of yards per play. 6.55 yards per play is actually pretty high. Not a mark that you generally want as a defense overall, right? The yardage mark, pretty solid, but giving up a little bit too much, in my mind, in terms of yards per play. Kind of a problem considering Oklahoma, despite the issues, 10th best in offense in the country. 6.42 yards per play, right around the mark, which the TCU Horned Frogs give up, 502 yards per game. And the weird part about TCU is, and I can kind of understand this line moving to 6.5, because when I saw 5 the opener at Circa, I figured that would go up here, because TCU has had defensive performances on both sides of the spectrum in this early season, right? Against Kansas State, they gave up just 4.7 yards per play, 289 total yards. They give up just 3 third down conversions on 13 attempts. But we just talked about Kansas State yesterday, and the fact that, like, I don't really love, like, the offense overall, and we've seen it scuffle here a little bit, and it's not the best dynamic, not the best quarterback play right now for Kansas State, especially since Skylar Thompson has been out with an injury. And then you get the other side of the spectrum, where against Iowa State, TCU gave up 8.1 yards per play, 423 total yards. We're still solid again on third down, 3 of 11. But so they're obviously somewhere in the middle, right? Their stats for the season dictate that. But when I see an Iowa State team able to dictate its offense and go 8 yards per pop and almost 500 total yards, like, that to me, I think that Oklahoma is going to be able to do what they want offensively when they get the ball. The question is Oklahoma defensively, and not so much stopping TCU. I think the issue for Oklahoma is, because, you know, it's surprising, like, the narrative, and it's a relatively true narrative that Oklahoma's defense is bad. The Sooners actually rank higher in total defense than TCU at this point. They're 20th in total defense, statistically better, giving up just 5.7 yards per play, 342.5 yards per game, both marks better than what TCU brings to the table. But for Oklahoma, it is going to be about being able to stop the run, because TCU, and we have seen this before, is going to try to dictate time of possession. They're going to try to keep you on the field, and it's twofold, right? One, their running game is really solid. The other is keeping this Oklahoma offense off the field. Oklahoma, though, relatively solid against the run on the season. Here's the issue, and we'll get to that. 3.36 yards per carry, really solid for Oklahoma. 96.5 yards per game, really solid. They have given up 11 rushing touchdowns, though, on the year. And, like, this is the thing, like, sometimes we talk about this, right, where, like, I love numbers a lot. But you should also be able to look past the numbers and realize that in spots this Oklahoma defense has not been good. So you don't want to just run in blindly and be like, see, the stats are telling you Oklahoma's defense is better than you think it is. Like, 11 rushing touchdowns is not good. There's something there to Oklahoma's defense not performing well. And TCU could be able to keep this offense off the field the way that they operate offensively. But regardless, I would agree with this market move, at least in terms of the side. You haven't seen anything in terms of the total. But Oklahoma, up to a 6.5-point favorite here, makes a little bit of sense. Now, going forward, and should note, too, by the way, Oklahoma, in terms of the market and where these numbers have gone, don't have anything solid. But back-to-back losses and, of course, back-to-back failed covers kind of got off that side with the win in the Red River Rivalry, with the win and cover over Texas. So we'll see if the market now, kind of coming back here on the Sooners against this TCU team, if that is warranted. Iowa State at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State opens a 4-point favorite with a total of 61.5, and then we get West Virginia at Texas Tech. This was the flip. Texas Tech opening one, West Virginia now favored in that matchup. But Iowa State, look, I really don't have a read, to be honest with you, on Iowa State for the most part. It's a team that has played down to its level of competition. Now, it has won 3 straight, has covered its last 2, that big win against Oklahoma, and then getting a 31-15 win as a 9.5-point favorite over Texas Tech in a spot, by the way, that just wasn't very good, right? Like, we're talking about coming off of a big win against the Sooners, whatever, the first time at home since, like, 1960, whatever it was. So not a great spot, but Texas Tech, of course, has kind of shown they're in a little bit of a bad spot here as a team overall, losing 3 straight and failing to cover 3 of the 4 games that they've played. But as far as the opponent goes, Oklahoma State, at least from a market perspective, has been a little underrated, you could say. The West Virginia game, in which they were 5.5-point favorite, and of course covered 127-13. Little too big of a favorite against Tulsa, but ultimately that game against Kansas where they were laying 21.5 and 147-7. So it's a matchup I didn't really have much on, but the market at least has been a little bit lower on Oklahoma State up to this point. This number now sitting at 3.5, so money coming in against the Cowboys in this spot. And then you get West Virginia and Texas Tech. Mountaineers have been the best defense statistically in the Big 12 for a good chunk of this short season. Against Kansas, again, we talked about this, right? The Kansas game, it's going to show as a non-cover or a push, but that opened up 27. They didn't cover that game. Market's super high, but I think it was more about being low on Kansas than anything else. But a really good defensive win against Baylor. They went to double overtime, which they really stymied Baylor, where, again, they got three possessions inside the West Virginia 30-yard line and got only 7 points out of those three total drives. So how West Virginia matches up with Texas Tech's offense is the matchup to watch. Texas Tech opened up as a 1-point favorite. Market drove it to 3, and maybe this is the point where the market gets a little too high on the Mountaineers, but we'll see, of course, because a 4-point swing here on the road for West Virginia now being favored away from home. With that, we get back to National Football League. Matt Newman's going to join us at the top of the next hour. We'll get his thoughts on some of his favorite games, and we'll get his thoughts on whether or not this show is absolutely insane, considering both myself and Jacob all over the New York Jets this coming weekend. Maybe get our faces kicked in. I kind of know what the answer is going to be. And then Sunday night football researcher Casey Halpern is going to join us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on some key games this coming weekend. All that and more here on The Edge. Racing fan, First Bet is the place for you. It is the easiest way to bet on your favorite sport with secure payments, attentive customer service, and a reliable website, all brought to you by ExpressBet. Sign up using the promo code Vegas500 today. Get a $10 free bet instantly, plus receive up to a $500 bonus for wagering in your first 30 days. Visit first.com/bet for more information. That's 1st.com/BET, promo code Vegas500. All right, wrapping up the first hour here on The Edge. Casey Halpern's with us. He's a researcher over on Sunday Night Football and NBC. Nice enough to give us a couple of minutes today. Casey, we appreciate the time. So let's just start with this. Can we get a little background on you? Because a researcher for Sunday Night Football, I like numbers and I like looking up stuff and reading. That sounds like a dream job.
Absolutely. First off, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on, Jonathan. I'm excited to be here today. So, yeah, I'm actually a recent college graduate from the University of Wisconsin. Graduated there about 3 years ago, and right now I currently work as a researcher for Sunday Night Football. So what does that entail? Just basically keeping a pulse on the entire slate of NFL games, creating broadcast scripts, all research nuggets, notes, trends, and statistics for all the talent on our Sunday Night Football pregame show, Football Night in America.
So I'm curious, like, how much do they dive into other analytics besides like basic stats? Because I know like Chris Collinsworth, for example, has that stake right with the PFF and all that grading system that they have over there. DVOA is a metric that we like to use on this show. Outside of the basic statistics, the guys that work around that program and what you use as well, Casey, how much do you dive into these other like deeper analytics in football?
So for the show, we don't dive so deep into the weeds on the pregame show as we like to highlight what happened during the day, what transpired. But obviously for the show itself, for the Sunday night game, you see all the Pro Football Focus rankings and all that fun stuff. But in my off time as well, I do a bunch of other freelance work where I like to dive into all the analytics on DVOA, Pro Football Reference, Pro Football Focus, you name it. So I try to get a gauge on everything that happens on Sunday while keeping a watchful eye. And I try and combine that with a analytical lens as well throughout the week and just researching all different nuggets and all that fun stuff.
I like it. So you can follow him on Twitter at Casey Halp, H-A-L-P. So let's get to a couple of games and get your thoughts on those. And if we got time, we'll dive into a couple that I want to get your thoughts on. Buffalo, New York. So you're entering a realm here, Casey, where myself, my producer, Jacob. We are in on markets getting a little too high here. There is a point at some point that the Jets are going to be somewhat attractive catching these points. It has gone from 13 to 12 and a half. I grabbed 13 earlier in the week, total of 45. What's the read on the Jets on the road coming off of two consecutive losses against the lowly Jets?
Okay, first of all, let me preface by saying I'm a diehard Jets fan, but I'm completely unbiased. So I'm about to slam this team. This team is anemic, they're lifeless, and they're coached by a grossly incompetent head coach in Adam Gase. They can't score against anyone. They're averaging 12 and a half points a game. And if Joe Flacco's at the helm on Sunday, I mean, I don't see any chance of this team winning. He's averaging just 50% passing, 4.9 yards per attempt. I just don't see how this team moves the ball. And if you also look at it, they have a minus 110-point differential. They lose on average by 18.3 points a game. So no matter what this number gets up to, I'd be comfortable taking this number by two touchdowns by the Bills. I mean, you couple that with the fact that Adam Gase is just 1-12 straight up in September and October games as Jets head coach, and he's just 2-10 against the spread in those games. One of those wins came last year when the Jets were down 30-7 in the fourth quarter to Jared Stidham. He threw a pick six to Jamal Adams. This team is lifeless. They can't move the ball. They rely on a 37-year-old Frank Gore. And another number that I love in this game is the Bills' first half, minus seven, which I saw before. Buffalo is outscoring teams 96-63 in the first half this season. The Jets have just two first-half touchdowns this year. They're getting outscored 110-29 in the first half this season. So I take the Bills' first half in this one as well as the Bills for the game. I mean, I just don't see how the Jets move the ball. All Adam Gase does is trot out 11 personnel. He refuses to do anything imaginative. He doesn't use any play action. It's just pathetic. This team is done. They're tanking for Trevor Lawrence, and it's pretty apparent on Sundays.
They might be tanking for Trevor, but Trevor might not want to be with them. That's the other part of the report.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Jets, so that's probably a likely outcome. Yep. Another year of heartbreak for us.
So let me ask you this really quickly before we get to the other two games. Your read on the Bills, because I was making the case earlier this week, like these two consecutive losses, people might be thinking, hey, what happened to Buffalo? I've made the case that this is the team that Buffalo has been. It's just that when you face lesser competition, you're going to get away with like three straight games where Josh Allen's going to lose fumbles, right? You're going to get away with blowing a 28-3 lead and probably a game, by the way, you should have lost because of that call at the end of that game. Like, I don't think anything has fundamentally changed with Buffalo. It's just that the competition has gotten better and it's exposed what is wrong with the Bills.
Absolutely. And look, they have a perfect get right scenario right now to beat up on the lifeless Jets. And I will mention that they will have a big boost back at defense with their linebacker, Matt Milano, who returned after missing the last two games.
Yep.
Milano is one of the better coverage linebackers in the league. And he had an interception against the Jets in week one, but yeah, to just build on your point, Buffalo is a team that really plays worse against a better competition, and then they play a lot better against inferior opponents and just beat up on them. Obviously, it would be great to see what they can do against the Chiefs, even though they got dismantled last week. But this is a get-right scenario for Buffalo, and I think they'll build off this and continue on and be a wild card team or even win the AFC East.
All right, let's go to the NFC South. Carolina on the road, 7.5 the line here against the New Orleans Saints. Used the Saints in a teaser this coming week, got them down to 1.5. What do you make of this matchup between the Panthers and the Saints?
So I make of this matchup is I think Carolina is getting too many points on the road, especially in a fanless Superdome. I would understand if the Superdome was rocking and if Drew Brees' his arm doesn't look like it was about to fall off. But another note that I actually found interesting is that Teddy Bridgewater is 30-10 against the spread as a starter. He's 16-3 against the spread on the road, and he's 14-2 against the spread as a road dog. And this Carolina team isn't a slouch. This team plays very hard. They're well coached by Matt Rhule. Their offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, he's going to be a hot name coming in this coaching cycle. I just love what they're doing with that offense. They're explosive. They totaled 400-plus yards in two of their last three games. They have two excellent wide receivers in Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore. And quite frankly, New Orleans just hasn't been playing that well so far of late. per Pro Football Focus, New Orleans has the fourth worst coverage grade in the NFL. So I don't see a reason why Joe Brady, Teddy Bridgewater, and this Carolina offense can't exploit that secondary with their weapons like DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, and Mike Davis. And it's just a revenge spot for Teddy Bridgewater against his old team. So I feel like he'll have a little extra motivation for this one.
What have you made of Carolina's defense over the last few weeks? Because defensive numbers have been much better. But if you look at the DVOA metrics, none of their last four opponents, Casey, have been ranked above 20. So there's kind of that thing you got to take with a grain of salt, right?
Right. So this is a young unit. They do play hard. But as you said, they haven't really played any great quarterbacks. But again, how great is Drew Brees so far this year? Like, yes, they've been winning football games, but the eye test and all the analytics will tell you he hasn't been that great. I mean, he looks probably the worst he ever has in his career. He looks kind of like he's getting up there. And the Carolina defense, they actually only allow quarterbacks to just 6.1 yards per attempt, which is a league low. And they've only had one game where they've allowed multiple TD passes. So I think they could keep this close. Like, again, this Matt Rhule team plays hard. Every stop Matt Rhule has coached him, he's built a program out of toughness and just playing hard. Just look at what he did at Temple. Look at what he did at Baylor. He turned the one-win program into an 11-win program in the span of 24 months. These guys love him. They play for him. And this Carolina defense has some really nice pieces in cornerback Dante Jackson, linebacker Shaq Thomas, and rookie is Jeremy Chinn and Derrick Brown, and one of my favorite underrated NFL players, edge rusher Brian Burns. So they're no slouch, but this is a group that's just getting better each and every week, and they're well coached.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this. Seattle on the road against Arizona. I have thought that Arizona is a team that is, I think, a little overvalued by the market. It's popped up in certain spots, and I got three with the Cowboys on Monday night. I would do it again. But what do you make of this matchup, Seahawks minus 3.5 against Arizona on the road?
So kind of similar to what we've been the theme here, these teams that we think are great, but then when they play superior competition, they don't play up to our expectation. The Cards are 4-2 with all four wins coming against Jimmy G, Dwayne Haskins, Joe Flacco, and Andy Dalton. Not exactly world beaters. This is a real test for this Cardinals team. Seattle has the number one offense in the NFL. Russell Wilson has this offense clicking. They're averaging 6.5 yards per play, 34 points per game, and they're the number one red zone team in the NFL. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if this Cards defense, which has been playing well, can stop this potent Seattle offense. But if you look at the underlying numbers, Arizona is still just ranked in the bottom half of coverage per Pro Football Focus. And you're going against probably the presumptive MVP in Russell Wilson. This guy's a three-star rated Michelin chef. He's making defenses look silly. And I just love him in this spot. And a neat nugget is, since 2013, Seattle is 5-0-2 against the spread in Arizona. The only time they didn't cover was Russell Wilson's NFL debut in 2012. So I expect them to remain undefeated off their bye and keep it rolling this week against Arizona.
Casey Halpern again, Sunday Night Football research for NBC at Casey Halp up on Twitter. Casey, we're up against it, but great spot, man. Thank you for coming on today.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me on. Enjoy the weekend and happy capping.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much. All right, wrapping up the first hour here of the program. Second hour, a lot more to get to. Matt Humans is going to join us at his usual Thursday spot at the top of the hour. We'll get his thoughts on what's going to go down in college football and the National Football League, what he likes, as well as getting into some of the side and total moves in the NFL, because we've had seen quite some adjustments since the beginning of the week in the news, of course, for that Bucs and Raiders game, which we'll dive into. Oh, and we have to get into this because I didn't put this in the rundown, but the Baltimore Ravens, yet again, just destroying the league, at least in terms of front office moves. We'll talk about that on the other side.